to see your face. Pass me by the crowds of people, the priest who sing your praise. Hello, my name is Shane Eidelman, and I'm the pastor of Westside Christian Fellowship in Leona Valley, California. It is my personal heart and goal for you to see truth through a biblical perspective. I hope that you enjoy this segment of Eidelman Unplugged.
Thank you for this episode of tuning into this episode of Eidelman Unplugged. I'm actually going to read. Can I call you Doctor? Dr. Paul?
Dr. Paul. That's good.
It's been getting to know you over the last few months has been amazing. Dr. Paul Brillhart is a distinguished physician with extensive qualifications, including board certification by the American Board of Family Medicine and fellowship with the Royal New Zealand College of General Practitioners and a board certification in nutrition with 40 years of experience in health care and leadership and management. So you currently practice as an integrative and functional medicine doctor in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And for people who aren't aware of that, I believe it's what functional medicine is, identifying the root cause of the problem.
That's correct.
Looking at what's the root cause, and then diet, lifestyle changes, and of course, medication if needed. He uses the best of both traditional and alternative healthcare to provide wellness and a preventative program that best suits the individual rather than a one-size-fits-all approach. And I love that. And I don't know, can you see the book here in your screen?
Yes. Yeah.
This book was amazing. The Lost, in case they can't, I'll do this. The Lost Art of Fasting in a Gluttonous World. The Lost Art of Fasting in a Gluttonous World. And I tell you what, I couldn't put that book down. I would say, and not just saying this because you're on the program, but it's probably the best fasting book I've read on when you talk about the scientific definition of autophagy and apoptosis and telomeres increasing and brain-derived neurotrophic factor and all these things I love from a Christian author or Christian doctor, or maybe a doctor who happens to be a Christian. I think there's so much here that we can unpack. But anyway, welcome to the program of Eidelman Unplugged. And we're going to jump right into this.
Well, thanks, Shane. Let me say right off that I so much appreciate what you do. You're using all of God's gifts that he gave you. He's using all of your experiences that you had.
Yes.
And it's very impressive, but it's just, it's good for the heart to see what you're doing and how God's using you. And you're impacting a lot of people. You're impacting the body of Christ, but people outside there too.
Right.
But anyway, it was a breath of fresh air, and that's kind of how we met, because there are no accidents, but coming across this video on YouTube, which we weren't even looking for. And I thought, oh my gosh, I've never seen a pastor do what you do in the manner you do it. With regards to fasting, we were talking about. So that's how we kind of got connected.
Yeah, what's interesting is, like you said, God uses our experiences. And I think most people are beginning to realize the absolute vitality, I don't even know what the word is, the incredible importance of taking care of our body. I mean, this is how we minister. This is how we parent. I mean, I think it's overlooked. And so when I became a pastor, I started to talk about this a little bit. And then the fear of man. Because people say, you know what, pastor, that's not that important. Just stick with, just theology. While this person's 80 pounds overweight and struggles with type 2 diabetes, and they want. And so I just saw so many parallels, and I really felt God wanted me to get back and talk about this because it's so important.
Right. And the churches, it's over the years, I've spoken in many churches on health and nutrition. Yeah. And it's kind of, it's been one of those subjects that they just really don't like.
Don't
touch my sacred cow. Don't talk to me about diet. And for the most part, I'm not trying to come down on the body,
but
they'll give it lip service, and they'll say, "Well, God just He loves me the way I am. Yeah. Don't talk to me about that." And it's very hard for them to really see, the importance of that. I mean, Paul talks about you know, disciplining himself. You know, he's fighting. He's going to win that race. He's going to discipline himself. He's going to not be taken out by anything. And so all things are lawful. All things are not expedient, but I'm not going to be brought under the subjection of any. So anyway, people aren't, they don't take things as serious as Paul. And well, that's for Paul, not for the body of Christ, you know. But no, the Lord calls us to be disciplined, disciplined ones, disciples. He didn't send us out to make believers. He actually said to go out and make disciples.
And I mean,
so
go ahead. I was just if you look at that verse, you know, when he said, "I discipline my body daily and bring it into subjection," you know, obviously there's spiritual disciplines and things. But if he's not talking about the lust of the flesh, I don't know what he's talking about. Obviously, I discipline my body and I bring it under control. So when I preach to others, I'm not disqualified because I'm, that can be gluttony, addiction. So, I mean, this is such a big topic, and I've seen it where it actually affects who people are at a very deep level. You know, they struggle with anger. Holy Spirit, take this anger away. Well, you need to get off that 500 milligrams of caffeine and this junk food and get some sleep, some good sleep, deep sleep. And I mean, there's so many things that you could look at there.
Right. And the church, they don't talk about eating. They definitely don't talk about fasting, and they don't talk about gluttony.
Oh, true.
And,
yeah.
And they really don't think about that. I mean, at one point, it's not in the scriptures, but you know, they were talking about the seven deadly sins. I think the first one is called, was it gastromargia or something? That's gluttony. They don't think about the gluttony that was talked about in the Bible. Gee, our son is a glutton and a drunkard. Well, we bring him out, and if he doesn't repent, he's going to be stoned. Okay. There's a few other references, you know, in the fasting again. I know I'm preaching to the choir here because you're well versed on all that, but
what's good for people to hear.
Yeah. The body never thinks about that as far as taking care of who they are. That, you know, again, Paul talks about your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit, and we need to maintain that. We need to take care of that. And he who defiles the temple, God will himself destroy.
True. Yeah. Well, let's get into this. I think I'm going to title it something like the final, or finally, the truth on fitness. I know it's a little bold. And I actually have some notes, so I want to make sure I don't miss anything. We stay on track. And I mean, each of these topics could be a podcast in and of themselves. So I'm thinking maybe just the key points on each one to make sure we get through everything. And again, I'm just want to highly recommend The Lost Art of Fasting in a Gluttonous World. I think that would really help a lot of people because you offer some solutions on that. But number one, why is there so much conflict when it comes to the area of health and fitness and dieting? You know, you've got paleo, you've got carnivore, you've got whole plant-based only. And I, you know, me and you've talked about this. We're on the same page. I mean, biblically speaking, if people would just stick to the Bible, you know, biblically speaking, you know, there's some freedom there and not getting caught up in all the different crazes, because a 30-day or 60-day diet is not going to fix a lifelong problem. You know, it's a lifestyle change.
That's right. And I kind of got into this, you know, the backdoor approach. I wasn't planning on doing this. I think I told you before, I wasn't planning on being a doctor.
Right.
That's a long story, but it was the Lord, and the Lord brought me into that. I didn't want to be a doctor, but now looking back, you know, thank you, Lord.
Yes.
He knew exactly what I was supposed to do. But in that journey, and part of that is in the book, as far as what I went through is experiencing things with patients. I would pray for patients. I would try to figure out what was going on. The traditional approach didn't have an answer. The Lord would just kind of drop a little tidbit into my head. and wondering where that came from. Because that's kind of how I got into integrative medicine, functional medicine. So once I would apply this, the patient would get better, and then I would have to think about it. Well, what else don't I know? Oh, Lord, can you teach me? So, he is the engineer of our body, and he's the one that designed our diet. And what I try and do with my patients, you've been indoctrinated, you've been fed a lie. This thing that we call food really isn't food. It's fake food.
Yeah, it is.
And it's a lot of chemicals. It's made by food scientists. For the most part, they're not Christians. They don't believe in God, and they don't realize what they're doing. And we're going to make it better. Okay,
It's
well, they
money.
never did.
It's money, money. Everything from seed oils to processed.
And again, no, there's a lot of that. I mean, they're very well intentioned,
True.
but when I got into medicine, I didn't know the history of medicine so much, and I assumed that everything was up and up as far as how we were taught, what we were taught, science behind it. I mean, we have a lot more science now than when we did.
Well, you're thinking there. When it comes to the diet, though, would you say then, the life-giving food, whole plant-based, even meat and dairy is controversial, but biblically speaking, if it's clean, and then you've seen the studies. There are studies out there that show moderate clean meat consumption is good, but then you watch it, Forks Over Knives and one of these other documentaries. I'm just like, how do they get conflicting information? Are they looking at different things?
Okay, yeah, they're making something that's simple very complex. Okay, the human body is very versatile, it's very adaptable, and if you study people's groups around the world, it has been done going back to the 30s and 40s. What's his name? The dentist that went
Oh
around, you know who I'm talking about?
yeah. I forgot his name too, but I'm sure we'll both.
Yeah, but it's
I keep thinking of Herbert Shelton, but he was a fasting.
No, he was more fasting, but it'll come to me afterwards. But anyway, he went around and studied all these people's groups, and this is back in the 30s, published, I think, early 40s. And his conclusion was the American diet is way too processed. Okay, so all of these people had different diets, they had different lifestyles, but they didn't have our diseases. So we have people that have, they're more carnivore, and then there are people that are more herbivore, and then we have people that are kind of both, like the Hansa people, the tribes over in Tanzania, and half the year they're more carny and the other herbs, and it's interesting. They're healthy, and
Yeah, I remember one group he studied, their diet was mainly sweet potatoes and not much meat at all. And you would think, oh my goodness, all these carbs. But they're also very active. I think we forget that too.
Right.
Not to interrupt, but I looked at my watch yesterday and I got in a full 1 mile of walking. I'm like,
Really?
no, that's all, that's it for the whole day.
Really?
I'm like, that's not good. I shoot for, 10,000 steps, and it's just,
Right.
if you're not, making it a priority. I think my point was a lot of these people were very active.
I try to look at it from the Lord's perspective. He gave us all of this food for our health. He designed it for our body, and if we follow those guidelines, we usually don't have a problem. What did Jesus eat?
Fish, bread.
Was he a vegetarian? No, he wasn't a vegetarian. I don't have anything against vegetarianism, but there's some little caveats. But Jesus ate he meat he ate meat, some lamb, some beef, not a lot. And I don't have a problem with the carnivore diet either, except not for the long haul.
Long haul. It's well,
Yeah.
because of the, well, it's Weston A. Price.
Yeah, that's it.
Weston A. Price. Yeah, his research was pretty incredible. John the Baptist, locust actually is 40-50% protein. I don't know if people know that. It's very good, high protein food.
Yeah, you ever tried it?
No, I don't. I don't think I will. But I think the is it the World Economic Forum wants us to all start eating insects. So that's really the thing, is moving more, and you're not carrying extra body weight. I mean, that is huge. And then when you mentioned the processed food, that's actually one of my questions: the truth about cholesterol, because with the refined oils, the big thing now is the is it the APOB? You know, APOB, because the APOB is what brings the LDL, the bad cholesterol, which I don't think is bad. It brings that to the repair site, and it repairs the inflammation, and so it's getting blamed for all the problems. But they're not looking at what's causing that damage in the artery.
Cholesterol is not an evil molecule. It's one of the most important molecules in your body.
Every cell needs it. Yeah.
No, if you take in, you know, if you take in, you know, I don't know, 300 milligrams, your body is going to, of cholesterol, your body's going to manufacture another 800 from the liver.
Right.
And it's necessary for all your cell walls. It's necessary for all your steroid hormones. It's for your brain. And by the way, it's the transport.
It's what?
So,
the transport agent?
Transport. So that's the cholesterol that we talk about. It's not cholesterol. It's lipoproteins.
Right. Yes. So,
high density lipoproteins, low density lipoproteins.
Yeah. And the high density, just so people know, the high density is what brings the cholesterol back into the liver.
Right.
Where the LDL takes the cholesterol out into the bloodstream to repair. And that's
right.
Why it's called the bad cholesterol. And I never understood. I've actually checked my cholesterol once when fasting. It was high. I'm like, oh, my goodness, why is my cholesterol so high when I'm fasting? Well, it's because the liver is already producing. So you have to wonder, all these diets, low fat, you know, instead of, you know, these cookies, crackers, all these, the low fat diet craze, getting rid of important monounsaturated, polyunsaturated, getting rid of all these fats. And then now putting in partially hydrogenated oils, aspartame, red dye 40 coloring, monosodium glutamate, and all these things that are not good for the body.
A sticky topic, and most of my colleagues are not going to agree with me on this, but somewhere in the 90s or something, I heard a lecture, and they were talking about LDL, and it was up on the big screen, and they were talking about pattern A, large, fluffy, buoyant, pattern B, hard dance. And then I was really confused, and I go, oh my gosh, you know, well, they're both LDL. I thought LDL was all bad.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out that, you know, pattern A, a large fluffy buoyant, is driven by fat intake. Pattern B is driven by carb intake. Mm-hmm. Pattern B is the type that we find oxidized and in the arterial wall.
Okay.
We don't find the pattern A in the wall. So people are a little confused. Well, I heard that, and then I didn't hear anything more about it. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, how can we never test for that if pattern B is bad? Why don't we look at that? Well, it turns out if we really did that, a lot of people wouldn't be put on statins. So there are genetic components to this. There are people that produce nothing but A for the most part. And then there's families that just produce B no matter what they do.
Just to bring in a point of clarification, the A is the, when you called it, the tighter, more dense particle in the in the LDL. That's the one causing damage, where the fluffier B is the one that's not.
No, it's the opposite.
Opposite. Okay. Opposite.
Okay. The A is large, fluffy.
And
the B is small, hard, dense.
Okay.
So
we could break down those. That would be more advantageous to see exactly what type is in a person's bloodstream.
Right. And so, well, I was a little confused. Well, why haven't I heard anything more about this? But for instance, using an example of a patient that came into me, she says, well, I, I know you're going to want to put me on a statin because everyone wants to put me on. She's 35 years old. Her cholesterol's a little over 400. And her LDL was 256. And
that's up there.
So I said, well, I understand. So tell me this. Does anyone else in your family have high cholesterol? And she goes, everyone. I go, everyone? She goes, everyone. Next question. Is there heart disease? She goes, not a soul. Extended family? No. So I said, well, we have to break down your cholesterol. Yeah. And so she comes back. I know I mentioned this to you before, the NMR lipoprofile.
Yep. Yes.
Yeah. So that's breaking it down into the particles. And so her LDL particle was somewhere around 2000, and that's a really high number, by the way. Yeah. That's very, very high. And of her pattern B was about 78. And the rest of all those were all A. Now, if you get below about, I think it's about 550 or something like that on your B, mm-hmm. you're doing good. Anyway, she's at 78.
Wow.
Okay. Her average particle size for LDL, this is all comers, she was slammed up against the wall over here. I've never seen someone with a particle size that high. So it was all pattern A. So no wonder.
And just to clarify, because a lot of people, you know, they're not quite sure what we're talking about. The bottom line is, although she had high cholesterol, when you broke down the particle sizes, it was actually the type of cholesterol that's not binding to the artery walls. So she probably wouldn't. Yeah. That's why heart disease doesn't run in her family.
Yeah. And the other factor is that the LDL pattern B isn't really a problem until it gets oxidized.
And oxidized is when it is oxidative stress, when it's...
Well, oxidative stress, yeah, oxidation is rust. But if you have free radicals through your blood, that's going to oxidize. So, someone's smoking.
Bad food is free.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Deep fried foods. You can take a group of 10-year-olds and you can go to their classroom and you can do a little Doppler on their artery and check their blood flow. Yeah. And you break the group into twos where half are going to go out and eat,
Andy.
No, a big extra serving size of fries. Okay.
Okay.
Out of Wendy's or McDonald's, wherever. And the other group is just going to get the equivalent in the vegetable oil. And of those two, which one's going to have a change in their blood flow? Well, after 2 hours, you measure their Doppler and you're going to see the little, flow. Mm-hmm. And the group with the fries has dropped down about 30% or so in their blood flow. And the other group hasn't changed any. Okay. Why? That's acute endothelial oxidative stress.
Of these oils from the fries.
Uh-huh. And so you're scouring your million miles of blood vessels with free radicals. Now, what does that do to the endothelial cells? Well, they can't release nitric oxide.
Right. And just so people know, the endothelial cells are the cells within the lining of the arteries.
Right. I'm sorry. Yes.
Yeah. I'm just trying to bring it down to the...
Right. So the endothelial
level,
inside the arteries. And the endothelial cells, they release nitric oxide, which, that relaxes.
Good, yeah.
Muscle, nitric oxide. So it's released with Viagra, okay?
Yeah.
It causes dilation of blood flow. So anyway,
I want to pause for a minute because I think this is one of the most critical points you've made. With the French fries, different things, those chemicals, the way the carbohydrates are even produced, the sodium, it's not even normal sodium, the type, all of that now that's in your blood is basically, it reminds me of sandpaper. Kind of going through and damaging the artery walls. So I think it's important for people.
Right.
That's why bad food, where if you take a grass-fed buffalo with some avocado, that fat is just, it's more smooth, and it's not causing the damage, the sandpaper against the artery walls. I mean, that is, I hope that gives people that vision.
That's a good analogy. Yeah. You've got blood flowing through your arteries, lickety split. I mean, it's very fast flowing, and you've got to have smooth arteries. You have to have no defects. Otherwise you get flow imbalances. So anything happens where you get a ding in that wall, the body's going to try and repair itself.
Yeah.
And this is part of where the cholesterol and entering the picture. Cholesterol isn't the perpetrator of the crime. He's at the scene of the crime. You know, he might be a getaway. He's a getaway driver. But
I like that analogy, because everyone makes it the bad guy there, you know.
Yeah, and it looks like it's more of a part of a healing response. So the problem isn't cholesterol. It's well, how did we get there in the first place? And then you have the glycocalyx. I think that's what it's called. It's the coating on the inside of your arteries. And it's a protein in glyco, and it might have a sugar component, but it's kind of like a film. So if you pick up a fish out of the water, what do you notice first?
Yeah, the slippery.
It's slimy. Okay. Well, that slime enables that fish to go through the water.
Right.
Okay. That's what's lining all of your arteries.
Right.
Okay. And so, well, what can damage that? Okay, you know, the bad food. But if you have high sugar levels, especially diabetics, it thins out that glycocalyx. And that glycocalyx acts as a protection, a protecting factor. And if you thin that out or really get it down, you're much more apt to damage the arterial wall. So you end up having the little dings, nicks, right. Maybe at the bifurcations.
Right.
So anyway, back to that whole picture with LDL and the fractions of that. If we were to look at what statins do, statins will lower both kinds, but they actually lower A more than B. And
I want that. Yeah.
Okay, well, the A is driven by fat, but we have been driven to believe that, okay, fat is what causes heart disease. Okay, so you know this, and I think I mentioned it in the book as well, and that was dealing with the seven country study.
Yep.
And, you know, I brought up that, you know, Menotti, who was one of the co-authors, the Italian, he went back in, I think it was 99, and he looked at their data. Well, they really hadn't looked at their carb data. They were so focused on proving that saturated fat was the causative factor that they never looked at their carb data. So 78, 99, okay, so 21 years later, he goes back and looks at their data and says, oh my gosh, small correlate with the fat, large correlate with the carbs. Okay, and so you never heard about that. The public didn't hear about that.
What would that mean to the common person, that the carbs, too many carbs were driving?
Right. So, well, going back to, you know, the mid 60s, we started coming into this idea, and they were debating it, and they didn't know which way it was going to go. Is it the carbs or is it the fat? And there were people that had the idea it was the carbs, but Ansel Keys, who was behind that study, he firmly believed it was all about the fat, and the saturated fat caused it. So he set that study up, and I looked at the study, and I looked at some data prior to the study, and I know that he kind of cherry picked the countries. Yeah. He eliminated two of the countries in Europe that had the highest consumption of saturated fat. Mm-hmm. They also had the lowest incidence of heart disease.
Yeah.
France, and even the French smoked more than the rest of Europe.
Right.
But they had the lowest heart disease.
Right.
And the highest saturated fat. And Germany was a follow-up to that.
So Well, I was going to
But
mention, because we mentioned antioxidants. Oh, I'm sorry. Do you have a closing point on that one?
well, anyway, the Sugar Council, they paid a lot of money. They buried
Evidence.
the guy that had the study over in the UK, showing just the opposite, and everyone went along with this mantra that, saturated fat is bad and it causes heart disease, and there you go. But at the same time, we knew about the Eskimos and their 80% fat intake, saturated fat, on top of that, whale blubber, seal blubber, and they have no heart disease. And they don't have stroke risk. Well, they have minimal thromboembolic stroke risk. Ours is over 700% above theirs. And heart disease, it really doesn't exist. But if you take them off the tundra and you feed them our diet,
Here it comes, yeah.
yeah, and within 10 years, they're having heart attacks and strokes.
So if I went back to that, the best diet that we initially started to talk about, it would say obviously what works for a person, but enough whole plant-based food, the veggies and the fruit, in moderation, of course, but also to possibly bring in some clean meat, a little bit of clean dairy, and then get more active. Basically, good food in moderation and more activity
Yeah,
would be okay.
right. Yeah, I don't tell my patients. I always tell them, look, I'm not telling you to eat like an
Right.
Eskimo.
Oh, yeah.
You
Yeah.
don't have to do that. But I will tell them the culprit isn't what they make them out to be. The fat isn't the problem. Now, there are good fats and bad fats,
Right.
and no, you don't need so much saturated fat, and not all saturated fat is the same. But I try to get a moderation. So, okay, the meat, the vegetables, the fruits, the nuts, the seeds, I try to get a balance. I'm pretty much more of a Mediterranean type, except I don't hold to the Mediterranean diet that most Americans think is a Mediterranean
Right.
diet. And I'm looking at whole foods. I'm looking at the foods. They're not processed food, they're not made up food. I'm trying to get as much natural whole food as I can, but everything's in balance. And
What's the key?
yeah, and as I mentioned, man is very, very versatile. They can adapt, and like the sweet potatoes.
And you mentioned earlier the so people know free radicals are they're basically they're missing, was it a proton or something? And so they're bouncing.
There, it's a yeah. There, it's an electron unpaired.
Electron, yeah, unpaired. And so they're bouncing around, and we've got all these free radicals. And what you mentioned is that this type of diet is actually very high in antioxidants. So the antioxidants give that free radical, they help balance out that it's not a free radical anymore. It becomes very stable. And so all this food that we're eating, the Doritos and the Dr. Pepper and the even bread, just normal bread, crackers, cookies, I mean, just about 90% of what we're eating is processed food, which is delivering even more free radicals into the body. And so we can easily
Right,
see,
yeah. And I can, if I can take a step back, to the mid '60s when this debate was going on, they started telling people fat was bad. Okay, so fat was dropped out your little pie graph: proteins, fats, carbs. The fats were shrunk, so the vacuum was filled in immediately with carbs. And you can plot it out. You can see the diabetes going up and the heart disease going up, and hypertension is part of heart disease. You start seeing the cancer go up. You start seeing everything go up, including Alzheimer's dementia, which is related to its type 3 diabetes, insulin resistance.
Absolutely.
That's not the cause of Alzheimer's. It's one of the big factors that feeds the whole thing. But the diet kept changing, and we thought it was going to be better, but it never stopped. Even when they brought to the attention, I remember in 2002, They came out with the International Congress of Diabetologists. They said, wow, if we don't do something, the kids born this year, by the time they reach adulthood, we're going to have huge numbers, up to, 30, 40, 50% are going to be diabetic. Well, those kids from 2002, now they've reached adulthood.
Yep.
Okay, and guess what? Now we're looking at, easily 50, 52% of the U.S. population is diabetic or pre-diabetic.
Right.
And then say, well, pre-diabetes isn't diabetes. Well, I beg to differ. It is.
It shows all the signs.
We didn't know when we determined, say a hemoglobin A1C of 6.5 is, that's the number right there. That's when you become a diabetic, and we'll give you your certificate there. But the pathology starts back at pre-diabetes, so 5.7 to 6.4. And the prime driver of coronary artery disease happens to be insulin resistance.
Yep, so true.
The APOE4 gene that is driving Alzheimer's, it also drives coronary artery disease. It's linked with that. Well, both of them have in common insulin resistance.
Talk a little bit about fasting and replacement therapy, hormone replacement therapy. And it might be good to mention too that the type of practice you do, you don't take on new clients, because I can imagine, people after hearing this are wanting to get in touch with you, but I think you're more dealing with specialty type issues now, correct?
I don't have an open practice.
Okay.
And no, I'm happy to I'm happy to do this, and I'm happy.
Right. That's
to
what I'm saying. Yeah, this should help. And a lot of people, because I help a lot of people with health and nutrition too. Obviously, not knowing as much as a doctor, I'm kind of know a lot about a lot of different things. If they can begin eating healthy, moderation, cutting out sugar, even intermittent fasting, getting active, and start to really take care of the body, a lot of their issues. That's the core of it. I think a lot of us know that, but we want that pill. If I can just take that pill, then I can enjoy, all these other things.
Right. And that's what we've kind of been indoctrinated, in the sense that, the answer to everything medically is pill. And yet that's a paradigm I try to get my patients to break, because that's not real at all. We were, the whole pharmaceutical industry isn't interested in any of this.
Right.
And there's so much money invested in the food industry and the pharmaceutical industry. The doctors out there, rank and file, are never going to receive any of this. They're not going to hear this.
Right.
Is it being taught in the medical schools? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. There's a few exceptions, but to this degree, no.
And there's a lot of people waking up, Peter Attia, Dr. I think it's Paul Saladino, of course yourself, a lot of the videos, Greenfield, Gary Brecka, Huberman, his podcast, and it's getting the message out there for sure.
There are tens of thousands of us out there.
Yeah.
That integrative functional medicine doctors and people, naturopaths and other practitioners of health, and some of whom you just mentioned. You have other people.
Many others, yeah.
PhD researchers that are bringing this stuff out, Walter Longo, bringing some of this stuff out. But for the most part, we've been sold this idea about drugs, and drugs are the answer. And here, this whole thing, this was the beauty of fasting, was this is engineered into your body to do this. And people say, well, how can you say that? Well, I happen to know it was engineered, but the whole thing, for instance, autophagy, okay. Now, what does autophagy do? It optimizes your cellular function. It cleans the house. It gets rid of oxidized, broken parts. cleans the place out, brings your energy levels up inside the cell. It optimizes functionality. Okay, and then it's going to clean out the, with mitophagy, it cleans out your weak, sick, oxidized, broken, you know, leaking mitochondria to be taken out.
Wow.
And that leaves room so we can restore them. Okay,
yeah.
And that's where the exercise comes in, and we stir up mitochondrial replication. But if we don't have that that mitochondria in that cellular house cleaning, wow, that never happens. And so people live inside this vehicle of theirs for how many years, and they've never done that. But they were taught that you have to eat three meals a day, snacks, and keep fueled, never skip a meal.
Yeah.
And all of that was not really true, and it's not really based on anything. Some of our colleagues out there, they're still saying, well, I don't know whether it's really good to skip breakfast. You know, breakfast is bad. And they quote some of the studies, like it comes out of the American Heart Association. It wasn't a study, it was an observational. Did they actually look at the types of diets? They found out
so much.
Oh, the people that are skipping breakfast. Well, yeah, but if you look at their energy,
they're going to McDonald's later, right?
Well, the amount of carbs that they're taking in, their sugar index is very, very high. Well, those are the people that are going to have bad problems. Okay.
Yeah.
We actually did better as a country when we were doing, you know, breakfast, lunch, dinner, no snacks. And so it was basically giving you a 14-hour fasting window. Okay. So if you eat dinner at 6 and you eat breakfast at
right.
8 o'clock, something like that. So actually we actually did much better. What were you going to say?
Yeah, well, I'm trying to find that. I mean, people have been sending me all week that news headline that 91% increases your heart attack rate by 91% now with intermittent fasting.
I don't
know if you've seen that. It's just,
well, no, I didn't see that, but I did kind of dig up the studies. In fact, I think I even have it on my desk here.
I'm going to try to, let me add to that too. My dad died younger than me. He was a year younger than where I'm at now. And he didn't eat breakfast. So he would, you know, but what was his breakfast? A pot of coffee. And people forget that coffee is a central nervous stimulant. It curbs hunger. So also, how many of these people, okay, they skip breakfast and but look at their whole lifestyle, you know,
right.
Pot of coffee, stressed out, then you go eat junk at lunch. You know, I think just the correlation of reading the article is just
right.
Misleading.
Well, yeah, no, it's very misleading. And you get a lot of these observational studies that they're horribly set up. And I'm thinking, well, who paid for that? Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And,
okay. The American Heart Association, I mean, they're the ones that put this out, and this was on one of their sites, and it was saying, well, you know, it looks like you might have increased cardiovascular disease.
Right.
Well, that's ridiculous. The American Heart Association, back in 2017, you're familiar with the Pierce study?
No, I'm not.
Okay, it was a 10-year nutritional study. It's looking at fats, carbs, and mortality risk. Okay, so we're trying to keep it simple: fats, carbs, mortality. And so they always said, you know, well, your study wasn't long enough. Well, this is a 10-year long study. Okay, and then they would say, well, your cohort isn't large enough. Okay, well, this was over 138,000 people. Well, it's not diverse enough, bioethnic diverse. Okay, well, this is in 19 countries, 5 continents. Okay, all right, okay. So, and we're trying to keep it simple. Let's just look at fats, carbs, mortality. So the synopsis in the abstract, if you look it up, it'll say, okay, overall mortality was higher in the high carb diet, which is the diet. And fats, specific types of fats, were not associated with increased cardiovascular disease, increased myocardial infarction risk, or increased cardiovascular death. Similar endpoints, but a little different. But they all pointed to, no, there's no correlation. Now, the kicker was the inverse correlation between saturated fat intake and stroke risk.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa, that's 180 degrees from what we've been taught.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, think of the Eskimos, okay? Saturated fat, they have no stroke. Okay, right, it's right. Almost done. Okay, well, that was published in The Lancet in November 2017. I was still living over in New Zealand at the time.
Right.
I knew it was coming out. I saw it, and I thought, wow, I already have almost two dozen studies on my desk saying the same exact thing, but this is a big study. And the next month in December, the American Heart Association, they put out a press release. We want everyone to know that you need to cut out saturated fat from your diet because it causes stroke risk. Well, excuse me, isn't that what you've been saying for 50 years?
Yeah.
Yes, it is. But it's time that we remind everyone.
Yeah.
Okay. No, you know, they read the study and they want everyone to know. So fast forward to June of the next year in 2018, the International Cardiology Conference over in Germany. I was kind of trolling in there and looking at their chat rooms, and no one wanted to talk about the in the room. The
wow.
Peer study. The peer wow. study. No one wants to even talk about it. Why? You're going to lose your
license. Yeah.
You're going to lose your tenure. You're going to lose your research. You're going to lose, yeah. you know, everything. Okay. No one's going to talk about it. Isn't that a shame?
Yeah. That's right.
Okay. And then you look at the people trying to poke holes in it and they couldn't.
No, there's no way around it.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, this is, I'm saying the American Heart Association, well, who is paying them?
Right. Right.
And you look at their funding, and of course, you know, I don't know why they want to come out and say, well, the intermittent fasting is bad and it's going to kill you and give heart disease. Well, you already know by reading, you know, what I've written.
Yeah.
That it's tremendously beneficial to your heart.
And just so people know, you made a good point. The longer, now there's a period there where if you go too long, of course, but the longer you go, there's your insulin is less, your spike in blood sugar levels, the heart is more relaxed, there's less toxins in the body. You said the mitochondria, which is in the cell, is being cleansed. You know, autophagy with the self-consuming, that's what the word means. It means it's going through, right. It's consuming. So if you're eating, actually you can't have both. Maybe a slight degree, but you can't have both autophagy and cleaning going on if you're constantly eating. I mean, it's just...
Right.
One or the other. So, I mean, it just, well, and even biblically speaking, you don't have to eat I don't think they had an AMPM on every corner.
No. I tell my patients, look, this is the default state of man. And they're going, what? Okay, look, 8 billion people on the planet, most of them live this way. What? Well, not intentionally, not knowingly.
Right.
They just don't have a fridge, a pantry, you know, a quick trip, fast food,
right.
Grocery stores full of processed food. No, they don't have that. And so they might eat, they could eat three meals a day, but they could eat two meals or one meal. And that's the way mankind has always lived.
Right.
We here in this country, we're the oddballs.
Yeah, we are.
We've gone to the extreme. But to go back to the note, you know, about all these things that happen and these benefits, you know, when you do fast, it has an effect. After you fast, your growth hormone goes up, and it goes up significantly. I don't know if you've looked
1,000%, right?
It's like
15 hours or 24 hours or 36.
Yeah. And so you get all of these incredible benefits. And what does that translate to? Increased stem cells.
Yeah.
Okay.
But we're talking, just to clarify, we're talking primarily at this point, if people can just drink water, because they're wondering, oh, can I have lots of juice? Well, there's your fructose and your insulin. And I mean, we're talking about mainly just having water to get that deep cleaning. And I know different right. people, I mean, 12 hours, 16, 24, you know, there's so much we could go into, which you did in your book. I have as far as, talk to your physician. What medication are you on? There's some people that shouldn't fast if you're having kidney issues, and because your kidney is going to work over. So there's, but we're talking about the average person. Try going 12, 16, 24 hours just drinking water. I mean, is that the that I'm sure, because people want some practical application too.
And that's exactly what I have my patients do. And I tell them, look, I don't expect you to start off with this. Some of them decide they're going to do it. I'm going to go for it. And I go, oh, it's kind of hard if you're not used to it. And it takes a little bit of turning on the genetic machinery, okay, to
Switching
get
the
going.
ketones.
And so I tell them, start off with, if you're at 12 hours, anyone can do that. I go to 14. Work it out. Try to going to 16. I like 18. Okay, but I'm not fixed on that. There are a lot of people that like the 20 hour fasting, 4 hour window, and that's fine too. I don't have a problem with that as long as they're getting all the nutrients they need,
In that
and
four-hour period,
that's kind of the key though. I mean, fasting, well, we're talking as short intermittent fast there, but making sure they're getting nutrient dense foods and adequate protein. And I know we'll talk about that after,
But also, what about extended fasting?
So that's what I was going to say was the 3 to 4 day, and I have people do that. And but even the most staunch people that they could never go past 12 hours, and they're shaky and sweaty and headachy, and okay. They come back to me and they say, "You won't believe what happened." And I go, And they tell me that, "Oh yeah, I went 24 hours. I finally made it there, and then I went to 36, and then I went." And then they come back and they say, "Hey, hey, my wife and I, we just finished a 4 day fast." And I go, "What? And, well, you told us about it." And I go, "Well, yeah, I didn't expect you to do it though." And I mentioned in the book about autoimmune disease, and this one couple that I just mentioned, he had rheumatoid arthritis, and he says, "This is crazy." So after months, he says,
Gone.
"My injections, these big expensive drugs that he was having to pay for, the time interval, because he was going injection to injection and having pain halfway through the middle of it." And he says, "Now I can go to the point where I'm not having any pain, and I don't know that I need the injection." Well, his blood markers were fine. It was remarkable. So he says, "Wow, so if I just periodically do this, it seems like I can downregulate it." But it's a very complex thing when you're dealing with the immune system.
Because
But
is it autoimmune? Isn't that the number one prescription? What we have take the most prescription for is right now is autoimmune disease. The top.
well, the most expensive ones.
And they're caused by either toxicity, right? Or deficit. One of the if there's nutrient deficits or toxicity building up in the thyroid or different areas.
With regards to autoimmune, it's linked mostly with the gut.
Gut bacteria, microbiome.
Okay, and it's the interaction of the immune system with within excuse me, the gut wall, and it's rather complex, but it has to do with the microbiome and the wrong bacteria proliferating, intestinal ability, inflammation of the gut lining, and proteins leaking across, or partially digested proteins leaking across, interacting with the immune cells, and you end up having this thing. So this thing start with your immune system attacking yourself. There's so many other factors. It's mind blowing. But
Bottom line.
with the intermittent fasting though, or fasting, or the autophagy, what it does is, when you go into fasting, it causes your oh my gosh, it causes your monocytes to go down. It causes your mTOR, which you're familiar Your mTOR is downregulated. It activates AMPK. So you're going to go more towards M2 macrophages, which are those are your healthy macrophages, as to the M1. And M1 is just the opposite. So when your mTOR goes up, your M1 goes up. And you don't want the M1, it's inflammatory. But the fasting triggers downregulation of your T17 cells with autoimmune disease. And
Okay, got it.
T17, you've heard of those.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it changes the Treg to T17 ratio. And with that imbalance, when you get the imbalance, you end up increasing that. But this is part of how this happens. The SIRT1 gene, which gets flipped, that's the anti-aging gene, of course, but the SIRT1 pathway, it gets flipped and all these crazy things happen. So you get the hypoxia-inducible factor, alpha, 1 alpha, something like that. That causes a downregulation of your T17. Okay, those are the ones that are driving this autoimmune. So immediately this patient is going, wow, what happened? I've had that happen with, I've treated many patients, but if I can get them into this, I'll put them on a 7 to 10 day water fast. And people say, well, that's crazy. I mean, just the idea of going, but you've done this. And once you go past about 2 days, your ketones are high enough and it shuts off, your appetite's gone.
Yeah.
Your energy is still there. Your mind is very clear. And people will think, oh my gosh, I'm going to lose all my muscle. Well, you don't lose it that quick. You
How much
really
do you lose? I've been meaning to ask you that. What would you say in a 1 week fast? I mean, because there's your body goes into muscle sparing mode because of our creator. You know, he
don't. Right.
our muscle spare. But however, I think in that process, isn't there a little bit of gluconeogenesis where your muscle is broken down? But
You.
did they ever know? Because I've seen other like Buchenheimer in Germany has 250 calories of juice. They say there's hardly any muscle broken down.
No, there's very little initially, and then you start breaking it down the longer you go into it. But
Okay.
if you're doing a 7 day, you're really not, that's really not a long,
Yeah.
super fast.
True.
But I mean, I know you've done longer fast, and I mean, it what was that?
How would you encourage someone to just, you know, would you say wean off, begin weaning off of coffee and sugar and processed food so it's a little more pleasant? Because
Yeah, well,
that's why people don't fast. I mean, hunger is one thing, but to me, hunger's nothing compared to the withdrawal symptoms of, you know.
right. So I tell them, look, this is all overwhelming. Okay, when you get this information, it's like drinking from a fire hydrant. Oh my gosh, I can't do all this. No, it's really simple. It's not rocket science.
Yeah.
It's just basic principles. And I tell them, I don't. Look, I don't teach diets. I teach lifestyle principles. And diets all work, they all fail, but this will work for you. I want you to take one step at a time. And, I'll take them off. Okay. Something simple. Oh my gosh, sodas. People drink sodas. Okay. Or they're drinking a lot of fruit juice. Well, it's natural. And I thought, well, I mean, is it natural to like eat 6 or 8 oranges at one time?
Oh.
I go, have an orange. And I tell them, look, just make a few little steps. And if you can do that, small, sure, steady steps lead to success. Okay, that's what I want you to do. And I just keep them on a short lead, and I bring them back. And the shortest or the longest would be 4 weeks. I bring them back at 4 weeks at least. But if I need to, even shorter. But I'll just say, this is what you do next. This is what you do next. But I try to extend their little fasting window farther and farther along. And of course, that is, you're hitting the SIRT1 gene, which is turning on insulin sensitivity. It's your fat burning is also being optimized. It's like going to the gym. You know, you go once a month, you're not going to see anything. If you go two or three times a week, you're going to start seeing changes right away. So I tell them, this is what you're doing. You're training your body and it will adjust. And that's why, for instance, people doing the keto diet, they start and they get the keto flu. What is the keto flu?
Okay. Adapting. Yeah.
Yeah. Your body's adapting. Headaches, sweats, nausea. Oh, I feel awful. I've got the keto flu. Well, that's just turning on the machinery. Now, you can do it slowly. You don't have to go into it full force, but it usually disappears after about 5 days.
Yeah.
And that's, we'll tell people that, but it's pretty amazing what people can do. I mean, be it reversing diabetes or reversing hypertension, or if they're doing it for weight loss, or I'm doing it for autoimmune disease, or I'm doing it for, my gosh, I'm even doing it with my cancer patients.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. But example with some guy that came in with a big guy from Barbados, and he had hypertension, he was obese, and he had diabetes uncontrolled on medication. So I just kind of gave him these principles, and I didn't see him again for 5 months.
Wow.
And he comes back in, and I check his A1C, and I go, it's the same as mine. Okay. Wow. And he says, I stopped my medication. I stopped my diabetes medication. Well, before, you know, I think he was 7.6. Right. And now he's, you know, below 5.7. I think he was 5.5, and he's on nothing. Okay. And he says, oh, I stopped my blood pressure medicine. Okay. His blood pressure is 110 over 70.
Is he still now, losing some weight?
Oh, he lost weight, you know? And so anyway, he was just, you know, he's a big, how old was he? 42. Okay, I mentioned he's from Barbados, big guy, 6'2". He went from obese down to overweight, all the way to, you're borderline overweight, but I think you're borderline overweight. I think you have muscle mass. In 5 months, yeah.
Did you minimize? Because in your book, you mentioned something that might work for a lot of people, that 600 calorie diet, you know, it's just enough to where you're not, you know, the fasting whores are kept at bay.
Right.
But it's just enough to get through life. And I'm wondering, is there amount of calories that do retain muscle? Like at 800 calories, you're still retaining muscle as long as your protein intake
is high. Yeah. So I told you before about some of those patients I was putting on a protein sparing modified fast.
Yeah.
And I was giving men, the minimal amount for men was like 70 grams and women 55.
Okay.
That's not a lot, but it was enough to spare protein. In fact, measuring their muscle mass as we were going on, you know, through the course, because sometimes I would have people on this for over a year.
Whoa.
Okay. Before I would re-alimentate them, you know, start eating regular food again.
Was it low calorie the whole time, or you'd increase?
Yeah, very, very low calorie. The men, it was around 600 to 650, something like that.
Okay.
The women were a little bit less, but they stayed on that. They had, you know, all the vitamins and nutrients they needed, but we were able to actually build muscle. So the people that they couldn't exercise because they were so big,
right.
But you know, after, you know, you drop down 100 pounds, wow, now we can start doing something.
Yeah.
Not that they couldn't, but some people, you know, their ankles were weak. There's too much weight, and you know, the next thing you know, they're going to the gym, building muscle. Okay, so not losing muscle, but building muscle, because I could measure that in my office. And that was, I was doing that back in the late 80s. I think I started in 87 doing
Well,
that.
I might have interrupted you with the guy with Barbados, but he got down a good weight in 5 months. How much was he eating during that 5 month period?
Okay, I did not put him on keto. I didn't take him off carbs. I just told him how to eat carbs. So the principle I told him was that, okay, no processed carbs. You're going to eliminate all processed carbs. And he took notes and he said, yeah, okay. So we're trying to get the glucose curve not to spike.
Too much.
But to go in and reach all your next eating time without making fat, kind of like that. So I tell them the two things that you need to focus on: nutrient dense, more above ground vegetables than below ground. The above ground vegetables have lots of fiber, and the fiber is going to slow down your glucose absorption. Right. Wow, it's all engineered. And the fiber is going to feed your microbiome, which is going to work in your favor for this whole weight loss thing.
And to your point about juice, eating six oranges, eating an orange with the juice, the pectin, I don't know if it's pectin there, but the fiber, the content, all of that slows down the rate.
Right.
The orange juice, because that's how God created us. Too.
Right. Yeah. But then we could take too much of that, okay, all at once.
Yeah.
And, okay, yeah, so I'm not going to eat six or eight oranges. I'm just going to have an orange, and it's actually fine. I'm not going to get a spike like that. I'm going to get a curve like that. So I tell them the fiber in your food is going to slow that down, and you use it as a fuel, and you get those nutrients. The second thing is the protein content. You need to have protein with your meals. And if you have protein, what is it? Your protein comes in with your other macros, your fats, carbs, proteins into the stomach. And the stomach is what? A pre-digestive pouch.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What does the stomach have in it?
Acid.
Hydrochloric acid. That's to prepare the protein. Okay. The carbs and fats don't get a free pass. They have to wait. Sorry, you came in with, you're going to have to, we're going to empty slower. Oh my gosh, I ate that steak. It's just sitting on my stomach. Well, it is. Okay. And as the stomach slows down, it's emptying, coming into the duodenum. Okay. That's where all the glucose is going to be absorbed, right? So if you slow down the gastric emptying, you're going to slow down the curve. And so the curve goes like that. Without, you know, if you had some Chinese meal with lots of noodles or whatever, and, you know, later you're yeah. You know, you're having problems. So anyway, those two things, the fiber, the vegetables, and the protein, and we're going to just have a nice smooth curve. That's what I told the guy. He came back and he said, that he says, I know you told me to go in slowly, but he says, you know, it's from Barbados.
Yeah. And yeah. And so what would you estimate? Maybe around 2000 calories a day he had? I mean, I guess it just
weight loss. He probably did. He's yeah, he was a good sized guy, 6'2", and he had probably about that amount. I went over his diet and it was really healthy.
Yeah, he would lose. And, you know, that whole thing, I mean, protein's such a big debate. I don't want to mention doctors' names, but a lot of them, you know, people follow fasting. And they talk about, you know, no animal products and just we don't need a lot of protein. And when you look at their physique, you can kind of tell that they're also very frail. And I know they're finding as we get older, especially, that lean muscle mass is really, really important. And then
right.
You can't get the protein content that you need. And I don't know why we were designed just to have plants only. Maybe the soil was different. Maybe, you know, we God said you can have meat after the flood. So I don't know how people made it. Maybe the environment, the ozone, the structure, the who knows? But I don't know if you've ever thought about that, but I thought it was funny.
Yeah. No, I have. And a lot of it is just conjecture. But no, absolutely. We were designed to eat plants, but meat came along. But he also enabled us to, you know, I mean, the whole Old Testament is full of meat eating. Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I got to throw this out there because I am curious your thoughts. I've went back and forth largely because of the influence of others. Because when I was in the health and fitness industry, I was overseeing, a lot of personal trainers, maybe 50, 60 of them, looking at their programs. I never was really certified, but I had a well-balanced knowledge on different things. But, the big thing was energy in, energy out. And then recently, early 2000s, and I can say even like Jason Fung, I'm sure you followed him and others, where they're just, it doesn't matter. Calories don't matter. It's hormones. And even a friend of mine, Dr. Daniel Pompa, we've talked about this before, and I understand it. It is hormones because a lot of it. But if you're taking in more energy than your body needs, you're going to store it. I mean, so calories, it's not like you can just eat 4,000 calories and, hey, it doesn't, calories don't matter. They actually do matter. I think is that we, because if you eat too much.
Yeah, absolutely. And as far as the protein goes, I mean, I've had bodybuilders that came in, and I had to tell them, like, look, you're diabetic. And how could I be diabetic? I don't need any carbs. Okay, well, to start off with, okay, so you're consuming 3 dozen eggs, okay, a day. Okay, just egg whites, okay, but 3 dozen eggs, and then you have 2 big slabs of this meat, okay. And it's huge amounts. You're talking so much protein that it's gluconeogenesis. You're breaking it all down and you're forming glucose. So with the keto diet, if people aren't, they say, I don't understand, I'm down to 20 grams of carbs, but I can't lose any, how come I'm not in ketosis? Well, they're either not taking in enough fat or they're taking in too much protein, because the protein is going to be converted into glucose, gluconeogenesis. And so and you're going to end up storing it. So kind of interesting. Most people don't do that. But as far as the how much, as far as grams per kilo or grams per pound, the amount that I was telling you with the very low calorie diet, that is more like
70%.
that's about 0.8 grams per kilo, if I recall right. But other people will vary on that. So I'm not fixated on one number. I don't believe in counting calories, but I tell people you may need to do that initially, just to figure out, wow, I really am consuming a lot. Wow, maybe I should shut that down and decrease my sizes. But I don't want them to fixate on it. But I do tell them, I want you to initially learn the content. If you're buying food that has labels, I go, find out how many grams of carbs you're taking in every day, and fats and proteins. But you don't have to keep doing that.
I remember when I got to my highest about, I don't know, 6, 7 years ago, I was 230. I'm 6'2" and I was 230. I'm like, I'm eating. I mean, I was eating pretty clean. But if you go and you write it down, like, oh man, a cup of cashews, that's like 800 calories. And I think what was getting me is snacks, even healthy snacks. I think if you start to write it down, you realize, oh, I'm like eating way too many calories. So I think it is good. I mean, the bottom line is people sh if they need to really lose some weight and get serious, they need to really monitor that caloric intake and make sure it's the right foods, that we're talking about.
And so I do have patients, after when I first meet them and I go over this, I say, you're going to keep a diary until I see you again, and you're going to tell me how much you eat, what time you eat, and let's see, what you eat, how much you eat, what time you eat, what time you go to bed, what time you wake up. And that kind of gives me a little something to go with. It's a springboard, so I can discuss, wow, did you know that you could substitute this for that? And why are you eating a snack? Why do you need a snack? Is it out of boredom, or are you actually hungry? And okay, well, the boredom, that's another issue dealing with that. But if you're eating nutrient dense foods and you have plenty of the vegetables with fiber, it should carry you through. The more the higher the amount of nutrients your food, okay, per calories.
All right, now we're going to delve into a few more important topics. Again, I'm here with Dr. Paul Brillhart. You can find his book on Amazon.com, The Lost Art of Fasting in a Gluttonous World. And I know people have a lot of questions for you, but I think the book will answer, you know, a lot of those questions.
Right.
And I don't know, we've touched on a lot. Go ahead. You want to enter?
The other way is through my site, drpaulbrillhart.com, and that should link to the page at the store.
Dr. Paul Brillhart, and I think they can see our names on this recording. It'll be in the title. We might even be able to put in YouTube in the description. And again, Dr. Paul does not have an open practice. So as much as I'd like him to take me on too, I know his client list is already full. But you know, so much information. If you go back and you listen to what we've been talking about, and I don't know if you had any additional thoughts, you know, kind of on your mind when we went through, you know, we talked about what diet is best, obviously getting clean, whole foods, clean meat, clean dairy. I mean, it's kind of hard, but even raw dairy to me is ideal because the pasteurization process kills a lot of enzymes and a lot of important nutrients, but I don't know if that's practical for anybody. Maybe on that note, what would you say, you know, watch your calories, whole foods, get active. But what do you do with dairy? That's always been my tough one. If I can't find raw because, you know, organic,
yeah.
But it's, you're just drinking a lot of lactose. You're drinking a lot of sugar water.
No, with the dairy, well, gee, are you drinking milk? Are you eating cheese? Are you doing
both.
Other yogurt or kefir? Absolutely, you need to go organic. That's an absolute. As far as going raw, yeah, that's not practical for most people.
Yeah, I wish it was. I don't have a farm.
Yeah, and then, you know, you get into, you know, problems with the authorities. I mean, they try to...
they do.
They'll try to shut a lot of those operations down. But that's another topic in and of itself. But I try to, I tell people everything in moderation, because there are people that will say absolutely no dairy.
Yeah. And it works good. It works good for some people, you know, do what works best for you.
Yeah. And so I just with that, because like what I said is the peoples around the world that have been, you know, they've been living off of dairy their whole life. And even some of these centenarians, okay, well, they're having some dairy protein in there as well. They're eating cheeses and kefirs and yogurts and things. But, you know, all of those diets vary quite a bit, but it's a very interesting topic. I try to moderation in all, and my gosh, you just feed the body. You put the vehicle in the you drive into the gas station and you're going to put good fuel in. You're not going to just say put whatever in. Okay, well, no, this vehicle only runs on super unleaded. By the way, don't use the diesel. Okay, no, it's okay, whatever fuel, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So I try to just focus in on doing away with all the fake food, try to get whole foods, nutrients, and then I try to get them to change their thinking about how they eat. And I tell them, don't be rigid. If you're rigid, you break. Okay. Be flexible.
Yeah.
And if you want to change lanes, you go from the carb lane to the fat lane or back, or if you want to take a break off the side of the road for a while, get back on the highway and go.
Yeah.
But think of this as a diet. It's a lifestyle.
Yeah.
So again, I tell my patients that I'm a driving instructor. I give driving lessons and this is it. I teach you how your vehicle operates. This is what it is. So if you stay with the basics, stay with the,
stay in the lane. Yeah.
Okay. Nutrient dense foods. So,
and you mentioned a word, centurion, right? Those who have made
centenarian.
Yeah. They've made it to 100 years old. And I don't know if I think I sent you the video, but I correspond sometimes with Gary Brecka. He used to be in the insurance industry, and he, they used to be able to pinpoint. He said something that on their study of these people who are 100, every single one of them had high cholesterol.
Yeah, no, that's true. And I mentioned that to someone yesterday. I said, well, you know that the centenarians don't have low cholesterol. And well, really? Yeah, that's right. So is it all about cholesterol? No, it's not all about cholesterol. Cholesterol, as we mentioned, is one of the most important molecules.
In the body, it controls
But
so much.
yeah, and so why do we want to suppress that? But hear from, when people are having events or heart attacks, the cardiologists are telling them, well, we need to lower it more. We need to lower it more. And they're getting so low that you end up getting that J curve and you end up having increased morbidity or mortality.
And this could just be me, I don't know if there's much to back it, but there's so many hormone problems right now, right? And so I'm thinking if we're really watching cholesterol and minimizing cholesterol, yet cholesterol is one of the main triggers to adequately adjust progesterone, estrogen, testosterone, growth hormone. I mean, how many hormones do we have? I don't even know. 50, 60? I don't
There's
really.
a lot.
Yeah,
There's
but
just a few.
so cholesterol is actually designed to help us balance hormones. So if we're minimizing cholesterol, especially if you're on statins, man, that could
You
really.
right. So just for those out there, I mean, we have the cholesterol molecule to start with. That's our chassis. And then we convert it into pregnenolone, oh, the mother hormone. Okay. And then it goes to DHEA and it comes over here to progesterone and cortisol. And you have the male hormones, and then it goes into the female hormones. So we have so many of these, but it requires the cholesterol. They're called steroid hormones because they are sterol-like. Humanoids like human. Okay. Steroids are like sterol. What is sterol? Cholesterol.
Cholesterol. Oh, that's a good. And when people say, "Oh, doctor put me on steroids," a lot of people think they're talking about the type of steroids you just talked about. They're not talking about anabolic, androgenic, which means anabolic growth, androgenic male hormone type. Those are different type of steroid. But it actually leads me into the point I'm trying to get at. All this push for you hear HRT, TRT, steroids, and maybe we should let the listener know HRT is hormone replacement therapy, which can be male or female. Estrogen, progesterone on the female, testosterone, human growth hormone. Well, I guess women that too, if they would need that. But then you have TRT, which is testosterone replacement therapy. Men are seeing a decrease in testosterone, and then you have steroids, which would be they're taking testosterone on their own, maybe from a doctor. They're also taking like Anavar or Anadrol, Dianabol. They're taking some growth hormones. So steroids, when somebody's on steroids, they're just overcompensating. They're just taking way too much. And I think that'd be a good way to break it down for the listener so they understand. But I think the thing, a lot of what's going on with hormones, and this I'm leading in, then I'll just give you the microphone, is cholesterol, yes. But also, what do they call those? Endocrine disruptors?
Yes, endocrine
Disruptors.
disrupting chemicals. So
Yeah, and we're seeing that in our hair
EDC.
products, deodorant. So I think that's why I like you do functional medicine, because so many people are going to the doctor, give me TRT. But if you're getting enough sleep, I mean, I'm sure firemen have low testosterone because of that, right? Sleep,
Yeah,
proper
absolutely.
diet. So maybe you can unpack that whole topic, and
Oh
I'll
my
just
God. Okay, so
In under 5 minutes, right? No kidding.
See, where do I jump into there? Okay, men, okay, hormones, okay, testosterone counts, sperm counts. So back when 40 something years ago, okay, when I first came into this, the ranges for sperm counts were like this. Okay, down here, this is bordering infertility. Okay,
In the
so
1980s.
This is in the sep this is in the yeah this would have been 1980 thereabouts.
Okay.
So below this is infertility. Okay, so now our new norm is this.
Oh wow.
Okay, so
wow.
Our range. Well, I thought this was infertility before. Well, no, that's now the new norm. So our fertility has dropped off tremendously. So that is due to some of the things you mentioned.
Yeah.
With the endocrine disrupting chemicals. So if people want to look that up, I mean, they can go to the Endocrine Society and look at some of the studies or some of the list. There's so many chemicals out there. For instance,
What is the endocrine system? That's actually the hormonal system.
Okay, that is the hormone.
Thalamus, adrenal glands.
So all of, yeah, from your hypothalamus to your pituitary to your thyroid to your adrenals to your gonads.
Okay.
All of those are part of the endocrine system.
Okay.
And so you see an endocrinologist because of an endocrine problem. So the endocrine disrupting chemicals disrupt the normal.
Well, yeah.
The normal flow of the hormones and their effect. So anyway, we've had a drop off in men's testosterone to a degree. Other things in our foods, what is it? Sodium, aluminum, is it phosphate? It shows up in almost every baked food. It's kind of one of these, I don't know whether it's an anti-caking agent or something, but it's in most.
Like emulsifiers or.
I don't know if it's an emulsifier, but it's one of those food ingredients. I'm sorry.
Carrageenan.
I don't remember exactly, but it's found in a lot of those foods, but it's an aluminum product. But
okay. It
drops sperm counts and it drops hormone levels. And so we're seeing that in men. You mentioned, occupational risk like a firefighter. Well, they have disrupted sleep, and sleep is so important for natural hormone production. So I probably have more firefighters that I see for low T than anyone.
Wow.
Okay. It's almost, okay, they don't have any problem for the first 3 years or so. And then all of a sudden they start noticing it. And these guys really, I mean, they're young, they're healthy, they're working out, and yet they're starting to drop off.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to use and exercise to optimize testosterone. And you know about this. And I mean, you can triple some guy's testosterone just by doing this if everything is working right. But men will have a drop off starting after about age 30. They really peak with their testosterone, not when they're a teenager.
And they're 20.
Yeah. Yeah, 20, 25, something like that. And you really don't drop off until after 30. But when, I hear from some of these men's clinics, at least the patients tell me, they said they're going to make my testosterone that of a 16-year-old. And I said, well, a 16-year-old doesn't have that high, believe it or not. It's actually later.
Right.
And but this is what they're telling guys. And they're saying everyone has levels up here. Well, those are out of range. And if you really look at the average ranges are much, much lower. Now, again, all that said, you know, we have problems with endocrine disrupting chemicals. We have other things impairing our testosterone.
And while you're thinking there too, I think this is an important point on testosterone. When you go get the injection, right? And some doctors recommend cypionate, ethinate, propionate, and those are all, they all have different esters. So they're going to maybe stay in the body longer. Testosterone suspension, which is water-based, but these are synthetic. So your testicles are basically going to shut down. It's going to eventually stop producing your testosterone. Now you're relying on the synthetic testosterone, which in my opinion, it's harder for the body to regulate. And that's why you'll see emotional highs and lows, you know, angry, mood swings. It's so many things can can come in. So my point was, you got to be very careful and make sure you're doing it for the right reasons as a last resort. Because so many guys
right.
do they want to get bigger too. They think, oh, I can take steroids now, you know.
Well, that's where most of these these guys are aiming, and they're listening to some of the men's clinics out there that are telling them this, and it's really not true. I'm all into balancing.
Yeah.
I mean, having low T no fun. And
no,
these guys, they have no energy. They're dragging. They're irritable and moody. They got the grumpy old man syndrome.
Yeah.
They're depressed. I've had guys coming in after they've been treated with four or five antidepressants. It wasn't, none of those worked.
Right.
And when I moved their T up, okay, all of a sudden they lit up and they're going, oh my gosh, I feel normal.
Mm-hmm. So in most cases, you would recommend it. You know, I probably would too. A fireman who needs to have his job, and you know, that's what it's there for.
Right.
But is there other, do you try, let's say they're there, can they make up that sleep 4 days a week and begin to change their diet and lose some weight? Or is that, is
it's very difficult with their schedule.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
You end up getting disrupted sleep more and more. Now, I've treated many of them after they retired. Okay. They still have some issues, but they don't have the same issue.
Got it.
But again, at that age, I mean, they're retired.
Yeah.
But again, many of them retire young from the fire service. But anyway, that's kind of a subset out there. But most guys out there, it's due to their diet. It's due to eating improperly.
Stress. Stress too.
Yeah. And the again, the stress releases cortisol, another steroid hormone, and that causes you to gain weight, and it causes problems with the brain and the function up there. It affects your hippocampus, and anyway, it gets back to diet. Okay.
Yeah.
And so I try to change that as much as I can. If I can't, okay, then we can look into other ways of going about it. The different forms of testosterone replacement would include injections, as you mentioned, pellets.
And the pellets are injected into or placed into the glute, and they're on time release.
Right. And, you know, you after 6 months, but you have to dial it in, and you have to make sure you get the right, because, well, you don't take it out. Okay.
No.
It's going to be there. So if you overshoot, I had a guy, I measured him. He's actually in the fire service. And he, I measured his testosterone at 6 months post last pellet, 3,000.
Wow.
Okay. If you're going over 1,000, that's, you know, that's actually out the more than two standard deviations from the average.
And are we looking at free testosterone, the amount, the testosterone that's active, or do you look at both?
Reading? I always look at both, but his total was, it was so high. It was like almost, you know, it was 3,000, and that was at 6 months, and he was shocked. And I said, do you know what that means? And he goes, they screwed up.
Yeah. But did he have mood swings or anything from that level?
He was, you know, he wanted me to take over his care because he says something's not right.
Well, that, no kidding. Wow.
So anyway, you can get into trouble with the pellets. It's basically a money maker. That's why they do it. Okay.
Yeah.
So, and it's a convenience, so you don't have to worry about anything, and you get a steady state. Well, yeah, theoretically it's a great idea. It's not practical for everyone. Maybe they can't afford it. Insurance isn't going to pick that up. The testosterone injections, say for instance, like Cipionate, you get a peak, and then you get a trough, and you get a peak and a trough. So you get this sawtooth type curve. So I don't like the peaks. If they go too high, they become irritable and moody. And, you know, this is where you get, you know, it can affect your moods. Okay. So if you get a nice steady state, there's usually not a problem.
And your
But
body, that's what your body does naturally, right?
right,
Ideally.
Your testosterone is going to be kind of steady. I mean, it peaks in the morning and then drops off throughout the day.
Right.
But these guys are having really highs and lows. And then the problem with the highs, with the injections, you're going to get red blood cell hyperplasia or overgrowth of red blood cells. So your blood is getting thicker. And that's not necessarily a good thing. And so those guys, I would say, well, you're going to have to, if you're getting out there and we can't avoid it, you're going to have to donate blood just to
get
kind
rid
of
of it. Yeah.
Drop the hemoglobin hematocrit down to a reasonable range. And so they might do that every 8 weeks, but that's not my ideal.
No.
As they get down to the lows, then they're feeling, you know, really yucky. Now, I have guys that, you know, they don't have any change. They feel fine here or here.
Mm-hmm.
They're in that window. But other guys, they can't handle those peaks. So I lower the dose. I shorten the interval. And so they have smaller sawtooth.
So for the listener, it wouldn't be 100 milligrams of cypionate a week. It would be 20 milligrams maybe every other day. You know, that way you're breaking up.
That's one way of doing it. Now, a lot of guys say, oh, I don't want to do that. Okay.
That's true.
Okay.
A shot every other day. It's not
okay.
Fun.
And then there are some people that have gone on to doing subcutaneous. Okay. Well, you can't do that. Well, people are doing it. I haven't seen any studies going into that, but there are other products that have come out more recently that subcutaneous I think it's enthanate that they're using, testosterone enthanate, but it's a once weekly, and it basically gives a more of a steady state.
What do you mean subcutaneous?
Okay, so like if you're injecting insulin, that's subcutaneous.
It's right in your ab. Yeah.
If you're injecting testosterone cypionate, you're going to be going intramuscular. So
absolutely.
you're going to be going in,
big
you
muscle,
know,
big needle,
inch,
yeah.
inch and a half. Okay.
And just this probably won't apply to most people, but I'm just curious real quick. What was the point of Sustanon 250 with the combination of all three, ethanate, propionate, and cypionate? I don't know if you've heard of that before.
Yeah, but I can't comment as an authority on that. I don't know.
It just hit my, so to give the guy some practical examples, endocrine disruptors, make sure your shaving cream, your, even women, your shampoo, conditioner, all, because your skin is an organ and it absorbs, and all the aluminum, if you're putting deodorant on a couple times a day, what we're putting on our skin, that's really the endocrine disruptors.
Yeah.
Also, I mean, isn't glyphosate plays a role in that, in Roundup and pesticides?
That's a nasty chemical.
There isn't
any safe level of glyphosate for the human body, and yet it's being found in all the GMO foods.
Yeah.
Well, they're Roundup resistant. And so you have companies like Quaker Oats, they went to Roundup Oats.
Wow. And just so people know, again, they GMO, genetically modified organism. So they have a friend of mine actually has a PhD in this and does gene splicing and works for Monsanto, believe it or not. And so he did it for a good reason, trying to get food down in Colombia and different, you know, trying to drought resistant areas. But so what they do is they'll actually splice the genes so you can spray Roundup pesticides on your wheat, and it won't kill the wheat. It will kill the weeds around it, because the wheat has been genetically modified to be resistant to Roundup, Roundup ready. So it's just mind-boggling.
So the residue is ending up on the plant, and it doesn't all come off.
No.
And so I remember in 2018, you know, seeing the report, a test on Quaker Oats, okay, and you know, the old fashioned,
yeah,
big bottles that come like that,
high level,
And they had you know, a fair amount of glyphosate found, detected in there. Well, there is no safe level of glyphosate, and it causes cancer. It causes a lot of things. It's like, well, how much mercury or arsenic or what, if you knew that was in there? Well, it's just a little bit of arsenic, you know, that won't hurt me.
Right.
So anyway, it's really not good. And we get into those, the very bad effects on our hormones too. But with regards to the testosterone, getting back to that, as far as the other forms, there are topical forms. There's gels and there's creams and patches. Those actually do give you a steady state, but you do have to put them on every day. The patch, yeah, again, every day. It's not always desirable because you get these red blotches all over your body every time you change it. Topical creams or gels, they can be transferable to other people. If you have, you know, small children, you know, if they're in contact, you
sure,
can
yeah.
rub that off. Generally speaking, if someone is cognizant, aware of that, they avoid, you know, contact, they're really not going to transfer it much. But you do have to, when you put it on, you're going to have to wash your hands really good, make sure that skin isn't exposed to anyone else. But that is a way. You'll get a steady state after about 7 days, roughly.
I was going to mention, what about, I know there's going to be a lot of women listening on menopause, hormone
yeah.
replacement therapy. What would you say is the percentage of women who don't need hormone replacement therapy who are actually taking it? If they would, you know, change diet, maybe ideal body weight, there's a lot of things that can, you know, I think my problem is, even yeah. with myself as I get older, is sometimes we want to run to this therapy, but neglect a lot of the primary causes.
Right. Yeah. So with myself, I monitor my T levels.
Okay.
I look at those, and I may not have as much as I had years ago, but I really haven't dropped off that much.
Okay.
And I'm just making sure it's not going to drop off, and I'm doing everything I can. But when I started being very mindful of my diet and all the other factors that influence it and eliminating things that will drop it, I saw it come up and it stayed up. So that's a good thing. With women, I try to optimize their diet. HRT is a life issue because there are women, everyone is different. There are women that say 10%, they don't get any hot flashes or sweats. So they say, I don't know what the deal is.
Right.
When I ask, you know, people in the field, you know, medicine, you know, well, what's menopause? Well, that's, they go through this period where they have hot flashes. Well, what if she never had hot flashes? Does that mean she didn't go through menopause? Oh, no. Yeah, she went through menopause. Well, how do you know? What's the definition? The definition is cessation of ovarian function and production of hormones. Okay. So they drop off. Okay. Some women get vasomotor symptoms. Some don't, and some they continue even, you know, 10, 15 years later.
Wow.
They're still getting, well, wait a minute, that can't be. No, they still are. I've had patients, many of them, that have told me about their hot flashes still existing. So for all these women in the middle, okay, every woman is different. Okay, they're going to experience maybe depression or anxiety. It peaks, it really goes up high in the perimenopause and the menopausal beginning, okay, but it doesn't drop off that much after things settle a little
bit. Okay, so things will settle if they ride it out.
Yeah, and things will settle out a little bit, but there's cognitive functioning issues, okay? They may not be able to focus, concentrate, multitask.
Okay.
And so for a lot of them, that's devastating. And they see the other changes. I mean, they come in and they're going, wow, why do I have all these aches? You know, I think I have arthritis, and my other doctor told me I have arthritis because this came on. And I'm bringing up the hormone levels a little bit, all of a sudden the arthritis disappears. Well, it wasn't
Wow.
due to, it wasn't osteoarthritis, especially the clue is that all of a sudden it came out of nowhere. Okay. And I've been having it for 6 months. Well, okay. And they say they're 51, 52 years of age. There's a clue there. But it's a quality of life issue. So they will lose their skin thickness. Their skin becomes dry, becomes itchy. They no longer have lubrication. They become dry down below. They have urinary problems. They can't hold their urine. Their hormones are dropping off. Women will drop off 50% testosterone production usually. I mean, the other half comes from the adrenals.
Do some women get on testosterone therapy then too? And estrogen just depends what they're on.
Yes, but I don't put all women on testosterone. There are some women, I mean, I can't even let them smell this stuff. I mean, they really react. And
Yeah.
other women, I give them a little bit and they're asking me for, can I have twice as much?
Yeah.
Because it makes all the difference in the world. And they feel like they have their life back. But every woman is different. And so I just say, I don't know what your template is. We're going to have to figure it out. And it's a little bit of trial and error. It's not one size fits all. And
True. Yep.
usually the pharmaceutical industry has the model of there's small and large.
Right. Yeah.
That's what we're, it's one or the other.
Yeah. And they never take lifestyle into consideration. They'll never.
Well, no, and no, none of my colleagues are educated on that, and so because it's not taught to us.
What would you recommend then for women before they jump right into hormone replacement therapy? I mean, looking, I mean, maybe increasing protein, a lot less sugar, a lot less
Oh,
carbohydrates, being.
if you get them off their addiction and you get them off their high carbohydrates, especially processed carbs,
Huge.
everything changes. Everything changes, and your body is able to kind of heal. But the high sugar content that weakens your immune system and it drives inflammation, and that's behind most all of our processes. So, oh my gosh, even the intermittent fasting. I mean, you end up having, we mentioned about growth hormone, after you do a little thing. Well, that's men and women, okay? And by the age of 60, our growth hormone is down to almost nothing, okay? But gee, it's amazing where you can, increase that. You can change growth hormone. You can increase that by doing intermittent fasting, or you're familiar with this also. I mean, doing brief HIIT workouts, okay? So you get the nitric oxide release, stimulating mitochondria, but it also stimulates testosterone and growth hormone.
Wow. And so people, what they hit is high intensity interval training. So you're doing things at a pretty high, I mean, a good, it's you're such a rate where you can't really talk and have a conversation is what I tell people. It's get on the bike, do a 2 minute interval, some push ups, some, I mean, you're keeping that heart rate high. It's high intensity interval, and that causes the body to increase all those areas.
But I want to distinguish between a high intensity interval training in a short brief period or a class for 30, 40
Oh
minutes.
yeah,
Okay,
please do.
I'm not talking about that, because in the studies going back several years, I think it was Dr. Bush. I don't remember his first name, but anyway, Dr. Bush did some of this work, and he was looking at this doing 3 to 5 minutes, okay? If you go past 10 minutes, you definitely get a washout effect. They didn't see these effects that I just mentioned with the nitric oxide. The nitric oxide hanging around for just a short time, it's concentrated, it's in your muscles, and it's not really dissipating yet. But if you keep working out, that dissipates and you will lose this effect. Okay, if you want to get big, you're going to have to work out, with heavier weights and for longer, okay? Or you're going to need to run a distance if you want to build up endurance. But for this brief thing, this is large muscle groups, okay? rapidly activated for brevity, short period of time. So some people refer to it as the nitric oxide dump. Okay, so the nitric oxide has time. And if you do that, say 2-3 times a day, you get this, you get more bang for your buck if you're doing the resistance workout or the cardio workout. Okay, you're going to get more effect from your muscles because of that. Okay, so I know a lot of trainers that incorporate this to get more response from their clientele. Okay, but you know, I've been teaching this to, you know, 75-year-old ladies for the last 15 years at least. Okay, and telling them, as you get older, you have to work out smarter, not harder. Okay. And you know about blood flow resistance bands, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, and I mean, people out there listening may not know what those are. You can explain, but when you're using those, you're getting a similar effect. You're actually holding on to that nitric oxide. Okay.
They're compressing the area.
Yeah. So the bands are, you can use them on your extremities. Okay. You can't use them on your neck.
Yeah.
But it's not a tourniquet. It's just, it's bringing down the flow, and it's while you're working out, but you can lift, not the super high weight. All you have to do is, you know, go say 3/4 of your max, and you will get the same benefit, and you won't have the risk of tearing the muscle fiber in the same way.
That's what I'm telling. For practical examples, people could just do some squats at home, or some tricep movements, or some bicep movements, or even not push-ups, but go down your knees, maybe half push-ups. I mean, you can, there's a lot of things you can do to be strategic about, you know, moving.
Yeah. Patients, look, you don't have to go to the gym to do this real quickly. I tell them first thing in the morning. Okay. I do this every morning. I put on a podcast. And I will do like 5 minutes. I might do 2 minutes of push-ups, and then I come up with maybe, I probably have 3 dozen different exercises I can do. They're nothing more than calisthenics if you think about it. But I was telling this to a Pilates instructor. And she says, oh my gosh, those are Pilates moves, you know? And she says, I know all those. And I said, well, this is how I want you to do them. And it does make a really big difference. And it gets people going, you know, first thing in the morning. Okay. It only takes 5 minutes.
Yeah.
I might do 7, but I try to keep it down.
Key is to keep moving. To kind of wind down here a little bit, I know there's some topics that are so important. Each of these would take a podcast again on their own, but maybe I can just hit you with a few quick things that people are interested in. Just maybe, yes, it works. No, it doesn't. And maybe a few quick thoughts on it.
All right.
What about the big craze right now with hydrogen water? You know, it seems to make sense. They're allowing hydrogen to go into their water before drinking it. I've been seeing a lot of.
I've looked at that. I've read a little bit on it.
Still up for discussion.
It's still up for discussion. Someone asked me about something else the other day, and they said, "Oh, that's a bunch of rubbish." And I go, "Sounds like rubbish, doesn't it?" I go, "But I'm not gonna close because I actually need to look at that."
Yeah, that's right.
And so I'm still looking at that myself. But I do understand the. You know, the principle behind it.
We just don't know if it's, would the hydrogen stay in the water enough to affect the cells in your body? You know, that's my question, you know.
But well, the body, that's the whole thing is the body has great adaptive systems in it to, for instance, you know, people taking alkaline water. I go, well, you know, someone told me last week, they go, I took alkaline water and all of a sudden my acid reflux was better. And I said, well, it's like taking an antacid. I said, do you realize that was, let's see, it wasn't sodium bicarbonate. They were using potassium bicarbonate, okay, that's put in the alkaline water. And I said, it's bicarb. And it just buffered your acid in your stomach. And all of a sudden, okay, but I don't address acid reflux disease
that way. Yeah.
Just giving antacids, okay. But I said, that's what you did. And that's why I said, but your body, I said, so you just neutralized all that alkaline, your body's going to make some more acid right after that. But, you know, people say, well, I need to eat more, you know, alkaline, and this is for cancer or whatever. Well, a lot of the foods that are alkaline, they end up being acidic, but
as soon as they touch
when they come to your, yeah, I mean, they're going to be, they actually turn into acid molecules in the whole process of the digestion. So what you thought you were putting into your body as an alkaline substance really isn't. And again, once it gets into your bloodstream, your buffering system takes over as long as everything is healthy.
Right. So that was my next question. I don't worry too much about pH water, pH level in the water. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I don't, it doesn't make sense to me. Okay. As far as the physiology involved and right. Why they're saying it. I'm thinking a lot of these people, I don't think they have a background in this to actually make that judgment.
Not true. Okay.
Show me the studies.
Yeah, exactly. And just real quick, cold water plunge.
Ah,
it's, you know.
Okay. I have a pool. Okay. It's currently about 50
I've
degrees.
I've tried it and it feels good, but it's not too easy. I don't
okay,
know.
Okay, so I know you're probably well versed on Wim Hof and that.
Yeah.
So anyway, my son and I sometime back, you know, we were talking about this, and so we decided, okay, let's start doing it. So I mean, a couple months ago, yeah, it actually went down to 28 degrees in my pool. Okay, and it's I have the water flowing; it's
wow.
still going.
Wow.
And so you get in as 28, that's below freezing. Okay. Yeah. It's pretty stinking cold. And I will say that's hard, but it has tremendous effects on decreasing inflammation. Your body reacts to extreme. So if you go into extreme cold or extreme heat, it has these incredible adaptive things and you come out better. So
now, fasting is an extreme. Fasting is getting your body out of a comfort zone.
Yeah, out of the comfort zone. So the idea of going into a freezing pool, it's really hard, but you know that it's just going to be mainly the first 30 seconds.
Yeah, they're hard. And I'm glad you brought that up, because with Wim Hof or anybody else, what's really helped me a lot over the years is, okay, these guys, there's some good information, but they're not believers. They're not grounded in God's word. They're talking about evolution, this doc. It's like, okay, biblically speaking, and you know, I mean, the Bible answers food intake, exercise. A lot of these things can be answered even biblically, you know, and I would say, yeah, we need to be exposed to cold and hot environments because that's how we were created. So okay. I don't really have a problem with it. I just think, you know, it's okay. not a cure-all, you know.
Yeah. No, it's not a cure-all, but what my son and I noticed, because we'd go out for we'd do a hard workout. He's a certified trainer, by the way.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, but he, you know, we would do a hard workout. You know, he was doing something else, I was doing something, and then we go for a long run, and we come back, and we go into the pool. Okay, so after doing this a little bit, I told him, I said, hey, have you noticed that you have less inflammation post-workout?
Oh.
And he says, absolutely. He says, yeah, I've noticed that. And he said, you're noticing it too? And I go, yeah. I go, this is pretty amazing. And then I, you know, I thought about, you know, all those pictures of these athletes that are sitting in a, you know, a big tank of ice cubes. Okay, that's why. Okay, it totally down-regulates that inflammatory response, but in a good way.
Yeah.
Okay. And so that's why the researchers were wanting to investigate and use Wim Hof himself as the guinea pig. Let's see what your body does.
No, it's
And
pretty amazing what you can do. I mean, it's
well,
beyond
yeah.
amazing.
Yeah. And yeah, I don't want to climb
Not ever so much shorts.
I don't want to climb the mountain snowing in shorts, and I don't want to do that, and I don't want to jump into a mountain stream. It's
Yeah.
are you can you hear me?
Yeah, you're good.
Okay, you froze up there. So it's kind of extreme, but
So
anyway,
somebody
it doesn't work.
technically they could take a cold shower, try cold.
And that's the other thing that people are encouraging. Yeah, just do a cold shower. It doesn't sound great because we like, our nice warm showers, but you can get used to it, and it actually has health benefits. Now, I don't do it. I definitely don't do that every day, but I might do that 2 or 3 times a week.
And
And
oh, go ahead. Sorry.
yeah, and even my son, I mean, back when it was like 32 degrees in the pool, he says, "I'm going out there." I thought, "Oh," I said, "Oh, you're coming down with something." He goes, "Yeah, I felt like I was coming down with something, so I'm gonna rev my immune system up." So,
Not
oh, don't go out in the cold, stay warm. Okay, well, anyway, he went out there for 2, 3 days in a row, and I mean, everything was gone. He says, "Yeah," so he's
Oh yeah,
only just.
that whole don't go out in the cold, you'll get sick is just, I mean, I
Oh.
think that's been
Well,
disproven.
yeah, but everyone still believes it.
Yeah,
So,
I hear that a
yeah,
lot.
we only do 5 minutes.
Yeah.
We're not doing longer than that.
What's funny, they'll go, oh, I can't go out in the cold, I won't get sick. Well, you're going through McDonald's every day. You might want to watch that a little bit closer than yes or no, red light therapy.
Ah,
Anything seems like
yeah. Okay, so there's different types of infrared saunas.
yeah.
Okay, so near infrared, good. Okay, far infrared, I don't know that it does that much.
Yeah, true, because you're not,
Okay,
it's not close to it.
far infrared, it's going to penetrate, about this deep, under your skin, maybe just a little bit. Okay, it doesn't really, it goes down a few millimeters. But if you go into the near infrared, going to go down inches.
Wow.
And what does that do? It that near infrared is going to stimulate your melatonin production. Where? Mitochondria.
On the cells.
Most of your melatonin is inside your mitochondria and
Wow.
a lot of different roles. But wow, so that's a good thing for your mitochondria? Absolutely. Okay. So the near infrared, yeah, it's on my list of things to do.
Yeah, I've looked at it's just the cost for most of us,
Well,
it's not.
my son and I we're going to build one, and we have everything.
Oh
We
yeah.
just haven't had the time.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you can make one of these yourself.
As one of our closing thoughts, what would be your top, because supplements is a whole new, I mean, we could talk about, coenzymes, we could talk about, the vitamin E's and K's and D's and multivitamin mineral, glutamine, we could just creatine. I mean, some of it seems overkill,
It is.
but what would I think we all agree that like you looked at my blood work, my vitamin D seemed low. So it'd be good to get a vitamin D supplement out in the, get a little bit of sun, a good multivitamin mineral, the zinc, the key ingredients there. Anything beyond that?
Right. You mentioned the D, and the D is very important, but we can't make it during the winter, and it has to be the right time of day and the angle of the sun. But you can make 10, 20,000 units in a half hour. Okay. The body stops, though. It doesn't keep making
Oh, I
it.
see.
It's
Okay.
kind of, it's just, it's what you need. But, the recommended daily allowance is what, 400 for kids, 600 for adults, or
Okay.
yeah. Yeah. I mean, it used to be 200, 400, and they moved it up a couple hundred, but again, I have people on, they've been taking 2,000 units a day, And they're taking it with food, and it's a reputable brand, and they're not getting their level up above 20. Okay, well, what's going on there?
Absorption.
Absorption potentially, but like I said, they're taking it with a meal. They're doing everything right, but some people need more. Okay, it doesn't always work that way. So I may have to move it up. But during the summer, the only thing different between my routine in the winter and summer, in the winter, I'm indoors every day.
Right.
Okay. And even on the weekends, well, I can't make D on the weekends, so I'm going to keep my D going. During the summer, I won't take my D on the weekends because I know I'm going to be out there for at least 30 minutes and I'm going to get sun exposure. You don't run into problems with risk of skin cancer unless you're burning yourself, and you generally aren't going to burn at 20, 30 minutes. If you go too low in your vitamin D level, you'll have risk of melanoma.
Oh, too low.
Oh, I thought, you know, if you get too much sun, okay, you're going to get melanoma. Well, when I lived and practiced in the Northwest, I diagnosed twice as much melanoma than I ever did practicing in San Diego for a decade or more. And okay,
I have personal thoughts that I don't think it's the sun causing as much damage as our diet.
Oh no. Oh yeah. But as far as the vitamin D and that role, it's because it's regulating your immune system. It's a steroid hormone, and it's built on the same chassis as the testosterone.
Right.
Is built two steps off the cholesterol molecule.
So with supplements then, because there's so many to cover, would you recommend maybe somebody get a pretty extensive test, blood work, and, you know, kind of see what they're lacking? But just a go-to would be a good multivitamin mineral.
Yeah. Most people, I focus on the diet, and you need a whole food diet. You need nutrient dense foods. But okay, as far as a multivitamin mineral, okay, yeah, that's fine. A good quality one, and that's not too spendy. The vitamin D is very inexpensive as well. Other items, depending on if they have comorbidities or things damaged from, you know, age. My gosh, there's so many supplements. I've known people that were spending $1,000 a month on all types of high-priced supplements, and were they better for it? Well, not really. And we could whittle it down, and I've done that for many people. And I go, well, you don't need to be taking in all of that. As far as supplements for your immune system, well,
high levels of vitamin C.
When you become ill with something, something's entering your I ramp up the C. So for instance, during COVID, people in the hospital that were suffering from severe COVID, their levels of ascorbic acid, vitamin C, were at the level of scurvy. Well, why? Because your immune system is highly utilizing vitamin C. It's just part, it's one little spoke in the wheel. During COVID, the patients hospitalized, severe COVID, one of the highest risk factors was low glutathione. They found out that was significantly correlated with worse outcome. Well, glutathione comes from your liver. It's one of the most important, if not the most important, antioxidant.
Yeah,
in your body. Now, how do you raise it? Well, you could take liposomal glutathione. It's a little more spendy than taking NAC, N-acetylcysteine. And N-acetylcysteine raises glutathione. So we've used that for forever. In the hospital, we use it, Mucormist. It's mucolytic anti-inflammatory for the airways. Wow, good stuff. We've used it in the respiratory wings for decades. In the emergency room, we give it in super high doses, and it nullifies, detoxes acetaminophen, Tylenol overdoses. So
Vitamin C in high doses?
No, no, this is NAC.
Oh, NHC, okay.
NAC is N-acetylcysteine.
Oh, NAC, yeah, they try NAC. To sell that supplement's available too.
Right, yeah, and so anyhow, I've used it for years for all my chronic lung patients, okay? And all of a sudden, you know, they're able to avoid as many exacerbations and flare-ups. It was a really good thing, but it's super good for that. So with COVID, yeah. They found that low glutathione levels were, you know, higher risk. So anyway, I've used that, my patients, my arsenal, for 25 years. I've used that along with C, okay, when people come down with the flu or the colds or, in this case, COVID. But you had the FDA under pressure by a pharmaceutical company starting with the letter P. They were trying to get them to pull NAC off the shelves. It's been on the shelves for decades, you know, 50, 60 years. So why now? Because people are using it to treat or ameliorate COVID. Okay, well, anyway, they backed down on that, and it's still out there. The next one for the immune system, if you're looking at RNA viruses, zinc. Okay, well, zinc is... it inhibits viral replication. You have to take enough of it. You can't take a higher dose for a long time because it's going to affect your copper metabolism. But you take that and it will inhibit that, shorten that. So it works for influenza. It works for COVID. It works for all of the right. RNA viruses. But in order to get it inside the cell, you need something like an ionophore, which here I use quercetin. You're familiar with that?
Yeah, that was quercetin. Yeah.
So quercetin is a bioflavonol that you're going to find.
Is that the Q enzyme?
No. It's different.
Just so people know, the zinc, you mentioned this, the zinc needs a delivery system into the cell.
This is one of the benefits of using it with quercetin, because quercetin will drive the zinc inside intracellularly so it can be used. You'll get some in, but to get more in, that's the goal. And so the quercetin, it comes in apple skins. You know, an apple a day keeps the doctor away. Well, anyway, you'd have to eat a bushel of apples to get a dose, though. But the quercetin is very interesting. I've used it for probably 30-something years for treating people with allergies. Why? It stabilizes mast cells that resist histamine. Well, it doesn't inhibit them. It actually, it's the epigenetics. It basically turns on the genes as they should be, okay? And you know, the epigenetics are how we control our genes, the code on top of the code. So anyway, quercetin does that for the mast cells. Well, it also works on other white blood cells. It's not just mast cells. So it actually helps you with your immune response. So you get a 2-for. So I use the acid vitamin C. I'll use the NAC. I'll use the zinc. I'll use the quercetin. And then I make sure, okay, if they're taking D, I tell them, you triple that dose for 3 days and then back off to your maintenance. You're not going to run into problems with that.
In a nutshell, then, with supplements, I would just say leave it at this, that people need to do a little bit of research and understand why they're taking it, why they need it, and maybe get rid of a lot of the things that, you know, like you said, you're taking 5 supplements, but if you're not eating healthy and exercising, they're not going to counteract. And you can have, overkill, overtoxicity. If you're putting too much, I need to take this and this and this and this and this and all the branch chain amino acids. I need electrolytes 3 times a day. You could be having too many electrolytes. And so, you know, just being
right. I try to tailor it to what are our goals. Okay. Someone with heart problems, if I'm trying to lower blood pressure, right. I might be using magnesium. Okay. I might be using magnesium for sleep. I might be using it for anxiety or muscle spasms or cramps, or decreasing migraine headaches. It depends on what I'm actually treating. So for people that have other heart problems, I might be using mitochondrial support. That might include CoQ10, CoQ10, ubiquinone, ubiquinol.
Red yeast.
That's for cholesterol.
Yeah, more cholesterol. Okay.
Okay, but the CoQ10 actually, that's one of the factors inside the mitochondria with the electron transport, and it's kind of stuck between the first two molecules. But if you don't have it there, you can't make ATP. You can't make ATP, you're dead.
That's it,
Okay.
the Q enzyme, ubiquinol. Ubiquinol helps.
Ubiquitin. It's
Ubiquinol.
ubiquitous.
Oh
It's
yeah, it's
ubiquitous.
ubiquinol.
And so it's you.
Well, let's. I mean, we could go down the rabbit hole here with supplements, but just to maybe give people a snapshot real quick. It's all mentioned. A lot of that's mentioned in your book, The Lost Art of Fasting in a Gluttonous World. But trying to get down to that more of an ideal body weight, smaller portions, intermittent fasting, God-given healthy food, exercise. I mean, it's all the things we already know, but what your book and what you did here is we break it down why this is so important. And I think encouraging people to fall forward, a lot of all your clients who succeed didn't do it perfectly.
No.
They blew it on Saturday, or they blew it at this family dinner, or the key is to really get back up and keep fighting again. And remember, at the end of the day, your spiritual health, your relationship with God is the foundation on which, all of this has to be built. I was taking all these notes and writing
Yeah.
everything, but I don't want to know if you want to leave with
Yeah.
any closing
Well, yeah,
thoughts.
no, I met this guy. I met this guy back in 1980. And he was I thought he was old at the time, but then
Yeah.
I met him many years later. But he was, he was, I guess he was retired in 1980, but he was an evangelist, and he was traveling around the world, and he had already been in Africa and Asia, and a
Wow.
lot of even the Middle East.
Wow.
And so he had a history of just traveling around the world, and he was constantly busy. Now, fast forward, when I was living in the Northwest, one of my patients, he was a pastor, and his wife was also a patient of mine, and she said, "Hey, I want you to meet my uncle." And I said, "Your uncle? Who's your uncle?" And so she told me, and I said, "Oh, I know who he is. I met him in 1980." Well,
Wow.
this is like 2000. I don't know, where was it?
That's
Probably 2010 or something like that. And so, what is it? 30 years later. Well, this guy is still traveling around the world, and he's coming into town, and he was visiting her, and anyway, yeah, I had met him. I was just early in medicine, and I had a lot of questions for him. But the people that were working with him, now this guy's nearly 90, okay, and he's still going strong. Now they're half his age, but they can't keep up with this guy. And I wanted to know, well, tell me about that. Well, he only eats healthy food, and he brings the food with him. And so his response to, "Well, why are you doing that?" "Because God's not with me yet. When he's finished with me yet, I'm ready and happy to go. But I'm not going to be taken out because of my poor discipline." He says, "So I'm gonna take care of my temple. I'm gonna take care of my body until it's time for me to go." Now,
Wow.
this guy, his wife had passed on. His daughter was helping him with the minister, but he says, "Oh, I'm flying over to," he was going somewhere over in Asia. And he said, "No, the Lord's calling me." He says, "Here, I just wrote a couple new books on this whole topic." And he says, "Here you go." And so this guy is going well at 90. So
Even
anyway,
right now,
no,
back in the early
this was
2000s.
back in, I don't know, 2010, maybe.
What did he say though? He only ate healthy no matter where he went.
Yeah, he brought his food with him because he says, "I can't afford to be taken out. And he says, hey, you know, the enemy wants to take me out. Okay. Yeah. Tempt me with this or that. And he said, look, I want to be with Jesus, but I don't get out early. So
Amen.
To me was, okay, I was already doing this stuff, but I thought, oh my gosh, he's a role model for me.
Wow, that is awesome. Well, Dr. Paul, thank you so much. And again, your website's probably the best spot to go, Dr. Paul Brillhart.
That'll be the link for the book.
Book when it's available.
DrPaulBrillhart.com.
DrPaulBrillhart.com. And we'll put it in the description of YouTube, you know, some of the links as well. So anyway, thank you so much. Any final comments, or do you think we covered a lot of stuff here?
We've covered a lot.
But with the bottom line with your fasting book is we should all be intermittent fasting to some degree, I think, instead of just keep caving in, you know.
I think this is, as I mentioned before, it's the default state of man. Okay. Yeah. This is what we were designed to do. True. And take advantage of it. The Lord put that into your body, and the machinery is there, whether you want to use it or not.
Yeah.
But it's, my gosh. Yeah. I mean, there's so much we haven't said, but yeah, I mean, it's anti-aging. It's good for your heart. It's good for your mind. Boy, getting into that also, what it does for your brain. The benefit is just endless. And the reason we wrote the book was to show not just about fasting, but there's science behind it that we never knew. It's only in the last 20 years that this has really been kind of teased out and uncovered, because we didn't understand the, you know, the epigenome at that time, before then. And so it's crazy wonderful. It's not a panacea. Right. Doesn't do everything. But I think people should start and kind of just venture, you know, dip their toes in the water.
Yep, exactly. I agree 100%. So anyway, I want to thank everyone for watching this episode of Eidelman Unplugged. Thank you.
If you've enjoyed this episode of Eidelman Unplugged, be sure to send us your ideas and topics for future episodes of the podcast. You can send us an email at westsidechristianfellowship.org or shaneidelman.com. Thank you for listening to us today, and join us again on the next episode.
Thank you for listening to Eidelman Unplugged. For more information, visit us at shaneidelman.com. Again, that's shaneidelman.com. El Paseo Publications proudly supports the Westside Christian Fellowship Radio Network. We are committed to quality in Christian publication. Free ebooks can be found at westsidechristianfellowship.org under free ebooks. Books such as What Works for Men and What Works for Young Adults will help readers understand that the obstacles ahead are never greater than God's power to take you through. Books such as What Works When Diets Don't and Feasting and Fasting demonstrate how health can be achieved from a biblical perspective. Other free books such as Answers for a Confused Church and Desperate for More of God show the importance of fully surrendering our lives to Christ. And One Nation Above God is a must-read for anyone concerned about the direction of America. Again, free downloads of these ebooks are available at westsidechristianfellowship.org. We are happy about partnering with the Westside Christian Fellowship Radio Network.